At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars. Restless by day, but at night rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me. The beast in me will loudly shake his keys when you cut in line, and put the wheels of the shopping cart on the curb instead of taking it to the shopping cart to turn it in. God help the beast in me.
That's a cover of Niccolo's famous song, The Beast in Me, being covered by Grindel Peterson. Praise the sweet angels in heaven. I finally got my vaccine. I went down to a church that I'd heard had extra doses and was able to get the jab. And it was mystical. The experience was mystical. Even if you're the most cynical, hardened, annoyed, sarcastic, pandemic denier, and you're looking down your nose at all of us who are waiting to get this jab, you have to admit that the possibility that this way of existing in the world is going to end, that we're going to be able to rub shoulders with strangers at amusement parks and clubs and bars and restaurants and the glory holes of the world. Because what's worse than having to wear a mask at a glory hole? It's like, is it okay to pull it down? The idea that that's all going to end is just a joyful dream. And a lot of us, we're afraid because we don't want to get our hopes up, because our hopes have been dashed so many times over and over again during this insane, turbulent, crazy year plus a few months. But I think the sun is beginning to rise. I think we're going to get to the other side of this. And it's coinciding with the seasons. You know, I'm a sap. Let's face it. I have every Les Miserables song memorized. I play it for my kid when we're driving in the car, and he likes it. I'm a sap. And therefore, I love when spring starts happening, especially now that I've experienced a winter. You know, if you're living in LA, you're going to get a wet, sloppy kind of winter, but you're not going to get the kind of winter you get up in the mountains of North Carolina. You're not going to get a legitimate winter. It's probably why you don't live on the East Coast, is because your poor, frail, little quivering West Coast body can't handle the pain of winter. But God, I understand, because my body certainly doesn't like it. I don't like it when it hurts when the wind blows. But part of the glory of spring is that it just slowly starts melting away, all of it. Suddenly, it's getting warmer. It's not raining as much anymore. Flowers are starting to show up in the ground. And it doesn't matter if you're the most despicable, totally cynical, angry bundle of defense mechanisms bundled inside of defense mechanisms, some little part of you is going to get affected by the spring. Because Even though the grand total walking callus that you have intentionally become because your sweet, sensitive baby heart decided it was better to be completely numb than to experience contact with reality, that little hummingbird heart that's still in you, it talks to the spring. And the spring says, don't worry. I know you think you're going to be existing inside a cynical, jaded, sarcastic, angry, human callus for the rest of your existence on this planet, but it's not going to be that way. You're going to get to grow out of all that thick, hardened, angry, cynical meat. And eventually, that being that has completely lost track of its heart is going to feel you again. Don't worry. And that's what I love about the spring. Because it's like, this is the idea. It doesn't last. Whatever the thing is, whatever the particular, at least I can only speak from experience. There might be someone listening to this right now who's hanging upside down in a Bavarian dungeon, getting hot wax dripped on their taint. Maybe they paid for the experience initially, but then when they asked to be released, they realized that they weren't getting out of the Bavarian castle. So I don't know, maybe like, but your captors are letting you listen to this podcast, as I can only assume an extra form of torture. So for you, I don't know if you're going to get out of there. But my own personal experience is that no matter how seemingly crystallized the horror of some particular phase of my life seems to be, no matter how much it seems like this shit is never going to end. And sometimes that experience could be can happen over the course of a few years or a few seconds, depending on what's happening. It always gets better. It always gets better. And sometimes it gets better in ways that I didn't expect. Sometimes it gets better than I hoped. Sometimes not as better as I would have liked, but it always gets better. And that's what I like about the very beginning of spring. You know, I passed somebody and I was like happy, too happy probably, I passed someone, I said, spring's here. And they smiled and said, the whispers of spring, which is a really poetic thing to say to someone you don't know on the street. But that's Asheville. Asheville's pretty cool. Point is, that's what I like, the whispers of spring. Because, you know, soon it's going to be full bore spring. Nature's going to be showing off, hyper green everywhere, and the flowers exploding out of everything. And it's like, we get it, it's spring, relax. But it's that very beginning of spring that I really love. That, because like the part of you doesn't want, even though you know this is how the seasons work, part of you doesn't, can't believe that if finally this winter, it's over. The winter's going to end. Soon, I'm not going to have to bundle my kids up to take them on bike rides. Soon, it's going to be hot and green, and all the dead trees are going to be alive, even though they weren't really dead. They just were naked, really. I mean, it's not a dead tree. It's a naked tree if the leaves are the clothes. And I like trees wearing clothes. Naked trees are creepy, to quote Voltaire. The point is, I think that's what we're seeing right now with this pandemic. And I could be wrong. And maybe someone's going to play this for me in a few months and be like, were you ever wrong? Now we're all Now we have boils all over our body from a mutated strain of the thing. And not only that, but the earthquake that you didn't know was coming happened. And the earth opened up. And out of the earth, the sulfuric transformational hell fumes rose into the sky and turned the birds into bullets that shot all of the children. So you are wrong, you sap. So fine, go ahead and send it to me. But that's what I think's happening with this pandemic. I think we can all kind of feel it. And I'm a fool enough to say it out loud. I don't care. So what? I'm wrong. I was also wrong about the meteor that I thought was going to impact at the beginning of this fucking pandemic. I thought the whole thing was a scam. They just wanted us to go indoors because they knew a meteor was going to impact the planet. And I wish I could have filmed my wife the many times she let me tell her that I think this is what it is. And the many times in various ways she said, what are you talking about? That is not what's happening. As it turns out, she was right. A meteor didn't impact. I was wrong. So I could be wrong about this, but I think we're at the end of this thing. I think maybe even by the summer, this thing's going to start melting away. And that is really exciting. A little dreadful too, by the way, because like right now I've got like the ultimate excuse to not go out. It's like, are you fucking crazy? There's a pandemic. You think I'm going to go out? I can't do stand up right now. I have care too much to do stand up. You know, it's a perfect excuse. But soon we're not going to have it anymore. And so we're going to have to come to terms with it. And we're all going to be like, for a little bit, we're all going to have to be really sweet to each other. I tweeted some snarky thing the other day and deleted it just because I realized like, no, don't do that right now. We're going to have to be really extra kind to each other coming up here. We're going to have to like join in with the spring a little bit. Because, I mean, all of us, especially the calloused baby hearts out there, man, we're rattled. Folks are freaked and excited, but freaked out. So we got to be extra sweet. Mimic the spring, you know, like in those moments where you're about to like, you know, symbolically give someone the linguistic backhand because you feel like they're whatever wrong and you're right. You turn that. Turn that backhand, whatever it was you were going to do, whether it was some passive-aggressive, shitty, symbolic back-turning or legitimate assault verbally, or hopefully not physically. Turn it into flowers. This is the best time to do it because the earth does it, right? It turns all the dead shit into flowers, and it does it right at the perfect time in the spring. And all those flowers appear, and all the leaves appear. And you have to be, no matter what, it's like, no matter what, it's going to get you. It's going to sink past all your defense mechanisms, and it's going to remind you of the reason that I like being an existing sentient being in this particular material universe, in this swath of the multiverse that we find ourselves. Which is that the flowers always end up growing. Somehow or another, they're always there. No matter how grim you assign personality to the winner, you know, no matter how grim, no matter how dedicated to being cold, naked, and deadly the winter personified may be, whether it likes it or not, flowers start growing out of it. Whether it likes it or not, it's just the way it goes. Is that a permanent situation? No. And probably the winter, as it looks on in shock as the spindly dead skeletal branches of its infinite trees begin to grow leaves again, maybe it knows, like, yeah, go ahead, do your fucking spring rant. you podcasting sap, but give it some time. And I'm going to get these fucking leaves off of me and freeze up again. It's true. You can't, you know, accept, you have to accept both realities. We need one for the other. That's the whole unfortunate point. You know, somebody tweeted some weird thing at me about this, the Midnight Gospel on Netflix, saying, how can you say gospel, which means good news, and midnight, which means darkness? It's like saying happy evil. Some terrible misinterpretation of what I think we were attempting in the name of that show, or what I thought it could mean. You know, which is like a more of like a, you know, the two things can exist together. Not that midnight's bad. I mean, if it was eternally daytime, we would all go crazy within a week. We'd hate it. So I get it. There's a place, obviously, for shitty, cold, creepy, lonely pandemics, I guess. They happen, so there must be some place for them. But if you're going to have a pandemic, unless it's the end of the world, you're going to also get an after the pandemic. That's what you get for getting to the other side of a pandemic. And after the pandemic, a time where like we are going to be hanging out with each other and we're not going to take it for granted for at least a few weeks. A time where we're going to be gathering together and be like, holy shit, we get to be together and not worry that one of us is going to kill the other one. I think that's right around the corner, and I'm very excited about it. And that's my spring sappy rant. Got a great show for you today, Freds. Daniele Bolelli is here with us. We're going to jump right into it, but first, this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
My dear loves, I just have to say it. Patreon, the Patreon community that has grown up around the DTFH and our weekly gatherings, has become some of the favorite moments of my week. And I would love to invite you to head over to patreon.com/DTFH and join your true family. I want to help you not get savaged by the animals of spring. This is not a threat. My attorneys have told me exactly how to say this, so it isn't a threat. I am not saying that if you don't sign up and subscribe to patreon.com/DTFH, there's a 95% chance that a small to mid-sized animal will attack you. It's not going to kill you. And I'm not saying anything like it would kill you, but it's going to leave potentially some gaping, painful wounds that you'll probably have to get some shots, because the animal, he could have been infected with some. I'm not saying the animal was infected with some special bioweapon that my team of scientists has developed. I'm not saying anything. I don't even know what I'm saying. Is that what you wanted me to say? Okay, to reiterate, I am not saying that I've done anything to the animal kingdom or to any creature. I'm not saying that I do or do not have a biologist working for me to develop bioweapons that create aggressive animals at all. And I'm not saying that if you subscribe to my Patreon, there will be less of a risk of you being attacked this spring by a creature. All I'm saying is head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. You'll get instant access to commercial-free episodes of the DTFH, along with tons of extra content. It's all there for you at patreon.com/DTFH. Now, friends, without further ado, let's start this podcast with one of the most requested guests on the DTFH. He's an author. He's a philosopher. He's a martial artist. He teaches history. He's like an Italian Bruce Lee, Indiana Jones, Socrates. He's written a lot of great books, and he's got some wonderful podcasts. I've been on The Drunken Taoist, but he also has History on Fire. And if this is your first time meeting Daniele, I'm sure after you listen to this, you're going to want to subscribe to his podcast, where he gives brilliant renditions of various exciting, oftentimes violent periods in human history. I feel lucky to call him my friend. So now, everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Daniele Bolelli. Hello, Daniele Boy, welcome back to the DTFH. Holy shit, man. You look where you're at.
Right?
Beautiful Ojai.
Not a bad gig. Not a bad gig at all.
It's one of the like escape zones, isn't it? It's like one of the LA escape zones.
Yeah, it feels awesome because, you know, the problem with small places, you know, most small places can be in beautiful settings. They're amazing, but you're usually surrounded by four toothless rednecks who are doing horrible things to each other's siblings.
Yeah.
But that's not the case in Hawaii. Hawaii is small, so it has all the advantages of the small place, but it's also has a pretty vibrant cultural life. It's close enough to LA that if you need to go in, you can. I dig it. Perfect medium.
Well, I'm glad that you got out of LA. I read this hilarious article yesterday about how the, what do they call them? They don't call them influencers anymore, but just basically like Jake Paul, like all of those people now started leaving LA, which is, that's crazy to think that even those people that have started bailing on the city.
Well, I mean, right now, it just, who knows what it's going to be in a year or two, but right now, during pandemic time, when so many things are closed down, where all the advantages of living in a city are really not there, and only the only thing you have are the disadvantages, it kind of makes sense that, you know, unless you absolutely have to be in LA because you do have a job that requires your physical presence, most stuff is not like that at this moment. So why be in a place where you're, you know, 2 years from now, maybe things, you know, when things are open, everything, who knows, maybe it's a whole different story. But right now, doesn't make sense. For me, doesn't make sense for good. Like, I don't want to go back to living in a city. But I understand for most people,
no,
maybe a different story.
As you start like unwrapping why live in a city, you know, and looking at it, and then you just play around with the math of that. Like, okay, what happens if we remove all the people who are in a city because of work?
Mm-hmm.
How many people are left in this city? Can the city sustain itself?
No, it's because of work. That's it. It really boils down to work.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's like you go to a city because there's people in the city, and because there's people in the city, there's work in the city for all the variety of things that need to be there for a city to function. So we need engineers, we need maintenance people, we need politicians, we need teachers. But then you can't work. Now then the city starts sort of unraveling.
Yep.
And then the people who are in the city that are left, they're in this strange predicament because the life of the city isn't there anymore. Like that magical spark is gone.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a really curious, is there, as a historian, can you think of other times in history where there was like people fleeing the cities and what happened after a city depopulates? Like what does happen?
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you look at like some, even if you look at like Rome, you know, was the center of the ancient world in the Mediterranean for a long time. Rome at some point did not recover its population at its height for centuries and centuries afterwards. Rome after for a while, for centuries, was like some backwater place. It was surreal because you would have all this monumental architecture, all these fantastic things, falling in ruins, essentially, because nobody knew how to take care of it anymore. Even the technology, the knowledge of how to do certain things, you know, this phenomenal aqueduct, the water system is great, except no one knows how to fix it anymore. So it's kind of as that Planet of the Apes feel, where you're there and you see these remnants of this amazing thing that just gone and decaying and turning into something else. That's like the heavy one. That's like the long-term stuff. Most of the time was short-term stuff. Wow. You know, it's like there's a plague, and so everybody flees to the countryside, and they are away from the city. And then 3 years later, they are back, and they rebuild. And 6 years later, it looks like nobody ever left, kind of thing.
Yeah, but the difference between those times and this time is that those people didn't have technology. They didn't have the ability to do what we're doing right now.
Yep.
And so they had to go back to the city because that's where the work was.
That,
to me, that's the part that's, if you look at like the Silicon Valley, the shift out of San Francisco, if you look at all the big companies that are letting their employees work remotely, would you say that we might like witness a reconfiguration of the kind of city-centered city life versus agrarian life, that there could be a kind of a weird homogenization of those two former polarities?
Sure. And I think that's the hope that one can have out of this fairly obnoxious scenario that we have been wrapped up in the past year or some, that it leads to a transformation where there's a lot more freedom for people to work remotely and not be stuck having to be glued to this one place where they don't really want to live there, but they have to because that's where the job is. And so they have to pay crazy overpriced, inflated values to live in an overcrowded place. The double-edged sword there is this, is that one of the big diseases of modern life is loneliness. You know, people are already not enough part of a community, not enough part of anything. And so physical work, and I don't mean physical work as in using your hands, but I mean physical work as in a work that requires your physical presence, is one of the very few ways that people have had to actually interact with other human beings in this kind of society.
Yes.
So the question becomes, if you remove that component, will these free up people to have more time and energy to actually build meaningful relationship outside of work because they live in a smaller community, they become invested in a smaller community, maybe they create a little village with their friends where they all live close to one another? And that's the ideal, right? That would be the best of both worlds. You get the old tribal style of close-knit community with the novelty of communication where you can interact with the whole world. The downside is if people instead are like locked in their little cabin, Unabomber style, in the middle of nowhere, they don't talk to anybody, they don't see anybody other than online, and then that's a nightmare.
That is scary. That possibility, because in that possibility, what's really odd about that is that, you know, looking at like the, like, you know, dystopian, like WALL-E style projections of some futuristic society where you are in the bubble, things just get delivered to you, you don't have to leave. It creates a really strange thing that could happen to someone, which is that the people that you're communicating with could be replaced by deep fakes, p- possessed by an AI and you would never even know it.
Pretty much, right? You're in the matrix at that point.
Yeah. You're in, like, you could put someone in a house. It's like some technological, like, Plato's cave.
Yep.
Except it's not like shadows on the wall. It's fucking AI infused deep fakes of the people that were their friends. They don't even know. They're not even talking to them.
Of course.
And you could do the same thing to their phone. So when they're calling, the number is just going to a deep fake. And that could happen to every single one of these bubble dwellers. And they would never know. There's a possibility that they would never know. That is one of the creepy, weird things that could happen. You know, you could be, you could theoretically, a country that had become hyper-insulated and had reduced where the each person is, as you're saying, had become like some kind of techno-reclusive worker.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, if you had the some kind of amazing technological weapon, you could attack the country by just making people by sending in like AI clones to people's Zoom meetings and confusing the fuck out of everybody. Suddenly you're like, imagine if like you and I are talking on Zoom and suddenly I'm like, fuck you Bilelli, you piece of fucking shit, I'm flying there to kick your fucking ass. You'd be like, Duncan, what's, are you okay, man? Are you all right? You know what I mean? And meanwhile, the same thing's happening to me from you or some other version of it. That is one of the creepy things. But I don't think that, I mean, do you really think that version of reality is possible? The atrophied, like hibernating techno-human, I mean, completely lonely?
It's kind of weird because on one end, no, because you figure and you hope that people are smart enough to see the potential in it. Yeah. On the other end, I mean, I don't know if it ever happened to you. Like, sometime, does it ever happen where maybe you have people around you who are cool, nice people, and, you know, they are trying to interact with you, and you're like, yeah, that's great, but let me go back to reply to Joe Blow on Twitter about what's going on. And suddenly you're, like, treating that interaction as more real than the people who are physically right in front of you. And you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yes.
Why?
Yes! Yeah, that's it. You have identified a real fucking problem. Some shadowy, you don't know what, that you've been talking to comes into your mind. A few hours later, you're thinking about Zornag 98176's critique of something you said.
Yes.
Instead of like your kids.
Yes. And that's when like, oh, something is wrong in this picture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like a fungus. That's like a form of futuristic technological athlete's foot, you know, like some techno mold is like crept into you and now you're like thinking of that shit. You know, I can't get her to not do it, but I try to get my wife to not look at, I'm like, don't look at the comments,
right,
you know, because it like you have to learn that over time,
yeah,
because you'll get infected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, so that's one of the problems, is that suddenly you're prioritizing relationships with beings that you don't even know are human.
Yep.
Could be a lab monkey that has learned how to telepathically communicate with Twitter,
right?
Could be an AI bot, could be something you don't even know what the fuck it is, could be a could be like a group of humans floating in some gel, all interacting as one super being via Twitter. You know, that's the thing. You don't know what you're talking to on that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Or whatever your particular social media thing is.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yeah, that is one of the possibilities. But then I think of this superstition and hype.
Uh-huh.
I think of PR campaigns, or in other words, like the brand of the city and its necessity to keep itself alive, not just via some industry, but by some sentimentality connected to the city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this is where you run into the person who's like, I'm an Angelino. Riding down Sunset Boulevard on a Friday when the sun is setting and you are going to the House of Blues, go down to Pink's. You get that kind of thing that shows up, which is a weird allegiance with what is nothing more than a kind of convergence of workers. So I think that part of the like negative appraisals of what I am hoping is a kind of new way of living, it's more related to the branding of cities and this kind of existential threat. If all of a sudden we're all like, I can be a fucking Angelino and live in North Carolina.
Yeah. No, and I think that's actually can work out great for everybody, because if you take away, doesn't have to be the mass exodus. I mean, it is a mass exodus, but it's not like a night and day thing. If you take away 20% of a population from a city, man, does that place become a lot more livable. There's less traffic. So people who actually are in the cities aren't going to enjoy their city a lot more. And people who are not in the city are going to enjoy it a lot more because they get to create their own close-knit community in a small place. So potentially it can be awesome for everybody, theoretically speaking. Of course, it depends on how you play those cards.
You know what? From that point of view, you're looking at like cities do like, what's it called? Viral shedding, which is like, you know what I mean? Like the, because at some point they have depopulated.
Yep.
And because of that depopulation, it's like, holy shit, this is amazing. I love it here. It starts slowly filling up. It's like a cyst that starts filling with more and more people. It gets more and more expensive. And then, but because it's so crowded, suddenly it becomes like a nexus for disease.
Yep.
And, or some other destabilizing contagion. And then all of these assholes like me are like, I'm out of here. That's like probably what a sneeze comes from. It's just a certain number of like dissatisfied, bitchy cold viruses being like, traffic here sucks. Everything always sucks out of these lungs. It used to be nice, but it's not anymore. And then blow them all out of your nose. They go and infect somebody else. Oh, now I'm in a new place. It's great. You know, that's probably what it is. Cities are just pustules that fill with people until they begin to fuck up. Then they spray those people all over the country. Suddenly, like, people in Texas are like, God damn it. L.A. shed, it's fucking did another shed.
Right. No, I mean, that's the reality, right? It's like you can only add so many people to a small place, or not even small, but like take any size. If you add a certain number of people past the point, it becomes overcrowded. Conditions of life begin to go down the drain. You know, think about a place like L.A. or think about any city. What happens to that infrastructure when you double the population, when you triple it, when you quadruple it?
Yeah.
Just to shit, inevitably, you know, quality of life takes a nosedive. So there is that process of like grow. Okay, you hit a limit. Now it's not that good anymore and shrink a little. Okay, now it's back to decent size.
Yeah.
Now, and you can, now before you couldn't because the city was the place. There was no other option if you wanted certain jobs. Now, maybe, you know, maybe, because just until the other day, there was this superstition that you have to be physical in the office and everybody, you know, the boss needs to look at you kind of thing.
Right.
Now that's hopefully changing. So that could give some serious opportunities to redesigning what life entails and work and community and everything else.
Right. Well, we haven't really, you know, I'm sure that we haven't had a chance to really sort of sift through all the data. So we don't know for sure regarding like productivity, because how are you really going to measure that? You can't, you need a few years to see like what effect it has. But I think the early reports coming in is that people are either more weirdly more productive or the same level of productive. And I mean, you know, from the perspective, I'm sure, of someone who's been spending God knows how much on commercial real estate to house their workers, it's the best thing ever.
It really
to
is.
for the workers to work remotely. Mm-hmm. But it's not fair because you're kind of saddled. Now you're like telling your workers, you need to pay for your office.
But, you know, your office is probably a corner of your bedroom or something. So you're there anyway. Great. You know, if the trade-off is I don't have to drive an hour and a half each way, right, each time or something, I'm like, I'll pay for my office 10 times. I'll have my office by the swimming pool. I'll do, you know, whatever.
But there should be don't you think there should be an acknowledgement?
I mean,
still fighting over whether or not we should pay people minimum wage. This is never going to fucking happen, but
sure.
It feels like there should be an acknowledgement of like, okay, because we no longer have an office, we're not paying, you know, depending on how large the company was, we're not paying 10, we just saved, you know, 10, 50, 100, I don't know, millions of dollars a year. So I feel like that money, a little bit of that should be given back to the workers.
Yeah, you know, if the person in charge is a decent human being, that could be an option. But of course, you know, you're relying on the goodwill and good attitude of the person in charge, which is always a sketchy game, since usually the name of the game when you run a company is maximize profit at all costs. But again, some people are cool. Some people are, they realize that they can make a lot of money and be cool to their workers at the same time. That is not an either or. And that's the ideal scenario, right? You make life better for everybody.
Yeah.
And on top of it is good for you. Win-win. You know, that's to me is the...
Win-win.
Yeah, it's the ultimate strategy. Like, to me, I'm very interested in strategies that don't rely on me fucking over you in order to get my own, but in working out something that works for me,
right,
and guess what, also works for you. That, to me, is the ultimate win-win. Because when it's not like that, then you are planting the seeds of conflict, you're planting the seeds of people coming to shoot you at your house, you're planting the seeds of you want a war, but really are just taking a break until
right.
the next war because the defeated side is pissed off and want the revenge. It never works, you know? It
right.
just doesn't work well. So you need to... It's important to figure out ways that everybody can be happy enough with, that they are like, you know, that works for me. Cool. Get your own. I'm glad for you because I'm also getting something. So we're good.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
It's important to figure out ways that everybody can be happy enough with, that they are like, you know, that works for me. Cool. Get your own. I'm glad for you because I'm also getting something. So we're good.
Right. Yeah, that's sort of the dreamy, that's the dreamy idea. But you know, some people, a lot of us, we're just not happy. You know, it's like the general confusion is that if I achieve this mm-hmm. particular level of comfort or security, I'm gonna have some happiness. But what if that's not the case?
Oh man,
so you're
hitting a door that I've been going through a lot lately because I'm about to release an episode on Bruce Lee. I went into a very deep dive on Bruce Lee's life. Mm. And one thing I never picked up on when I was reading on Bruce Lee earlier, when I researched Bruce Lee in the past, I never picked up his relationship with success. And in this last time, it really hit me big because the thing with him is that he achieves things that are unreal, right? Like the success that Bruce Lee has in the span of a couple of years is the equivalent of winning the lottery 5 times in a row. The odds are next to impossible, mm-hmm. and he pulls it off.
Yeah.
You know, he's a Chinese dude with a heavy accent who managed to become the biggest actor in the world in the moment. It's unreal.
Yeah.
And then you see his interviews, you see what he says, and there's this sense that you know, he was looking for success because that was going to deliver all his dreams, was going to increase his opportunity to choose the life he wants. And instead, it actually shrinks his range of choice, because suddenly, for one, he doesn't know whether the money train is going to end anytime soon or not. So he has to keep the foot on the gas pedal the whole time. He can no longer go anywhere. He feels every interaction he has, he doesn't know if somebody's really being a friend or they want something from him. And on top of it, he just drives himself nuts. He's working all day long because he feels like the opportunities are here now. I don't know if they will be here tomorrow. I need to take them. And in the process of doing that, he just wrecks his body and his physical state, which then made it a lot easier to have an allergic reaction to medication that did him in. But it's a crazy tale.
Wow.
You know, you see a guy who's a god. I mean, the stuff he pulls off is so amazing that you have to just bow down to the genius of it all. And yet he's less happy than he ever was. And it was weird for me when I was researching.
Yeah.
Because I started researching it about a couple of years ago, when for me, I was... you know, I never had much money or things, but a couple of years ago, things were turning for me in a good way, where I was like, oh, shit, I'm actually doing better than I ever have. This is interesting. This is... And I remember my lady, Savannah, one day was looking at me, and she's like, that's not what success looks like to me. And I'm like, what do you mean? And I'm like waking up, and like 3 seconds after I open my eyes, I'm checking emails, replying, I'm working till 1 a.m. I'm like, can't you tell I've been really successful here? And I'm just like, no, motherfucker. Yeah, your bank account is in healthier shape than it has been. But no, your quality of life has gone down, not up. And unless you make some serious adjustments, it's so easy to just get that dopamine hit from like, I made more money. Okay, I feel a little better. And it's just like, dangerous, dangerous game.
Wow. Yeah, like you were told what success is via media. Uh-huh. And it looks good. I mean, especially like on TV, it looks amazing because you don't see these people in between the movies they're acting in or the tiny little frame of time that they're captured in some interview. In the interview, they're like these beautiful, witty people, but then you don't see the in between.
Yeah.
No, and most importantly, you don't feel their consciousness. Because if you could, maybe you would realize like, oh, Jesus, God, these people who do have more access, these people who are like, you know, living in multiple beautiful fucking homes and never will ever worry about not being able to pay a bill are just as freaked out when they wake up in the morning as I am. But I thought the reason I was freaked out was because I didn't have that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, God. What the fuck? This is awful, because then you start getting the sense that you've had a pretty massive trick played on you. It's a trick. Like somebody tricked me into believing this shit. And it's not like, I mean, it's cereal box philosophy that stuff isn't going to make you happy. You hear that like on those Yoda dolls where you pull the string in the back or whatever. It's not like we're talking about some kind of high level shit here. And yet, there's a reason that floats in the air around your ambition. Is it's just like, because to me, it's like the dopamine hits from making money.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how sweet they are. But they can't match the dopamine hits when you just ran 2 more miles and you thought you were going to run on a day when it's like cold and raining. You know what I mean? Nothing can match.
Totally.
Nothing can match that. Like that's the real juice. You know, it's like, and that's, I love that, because I don't care how fucking rich you are. You can't. Nobody can run for you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can do push-ups for you.
Yep.
You know, no one can like write a book for you, and no one can learn piano for you, and no one can like learn a new language for you. You have to do that. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It's an equal playing field in that, in the level of like achieving like some kind of you know, of in transforming yourself, refining yourself. You know what I mean? Like, money isn't going to do anything. Abundance in that way isn't going to do anything.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because clearly money makes dealing with a bunch of problems that people deal with every day 100 times easier.
Fuck,
you know,
yes.
If you can just say, don't worry about that. The car is broken. Fine. Taken care of. Yeah. No problem. So yeah. That does take away a hell of a lot of real stress.
Yes, it does.
So that part is real. And that's why it's not that people are stupid. It's like, there's a very good reason why people feel, man, if I only had more money, life would be easier. Yeah, it would be easier. But no,
it would be easier.
It would not be by any stretch of the imagination suddenly everything clicks. No, that's a whole separate thing. It's like you just have, you start the game with better cards. That's all there is. It doesn't mean you won the game. It's just you start the game with better cards. That's great. But that in no way, shape, or form ensures the fact that, you know, it gives you great chances that you're going to have good cards at the end, but it doesn't ensure that happiness factor, which is the one that ultimately winning the game is all about. And that's where, you know, we mistake the process that we think is going to deliver it for the actual experience. And the actual experience, unfortunately, ooh, you know, unless you have it at every step of the way in one form or another, you're not going to get there. You know, you're not going to have that moment where you get there and you're like, oh, now I get to have the experience. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
No, no, you don't. That's so infuriating. Mm-hmm. But it's also exciting, isn't it? It's like, to me, that's like, as I spin through, you know, if you're like an old school conspiracy person as I am, you grew up taking acid, you know, looking at dollar bills, thinking about like all the things that, like, well, if they've made this like massively illegal and it just makes me feel amazing and seems to improve my quality of life, then what other shit have they completely fucked up?
Yeah.
And so it creates this like this sort of, at first your whole world can like fall apart as you're looking out at it and thinking like, my God, how much of what I do is even my own freedom, and how much of it has been implanted in me by people who just like have, we've all gone into some hypnotic resonant field that seems to be centered on consuming or more importantly, an addiction to new stuff.
Yep.
You know, we want new shirts, new clothes, new car, new house, new this, new that, novelty addiction. Specifically.
Yep.
And but then over time I want to like refine the conspiracy theories, bring them all together into one sort of profound, you know how they want like the what's in physics, they want the unified field theory.
Yeah,
I want that
with
the unified conspiracy theory.
Okay.
Yeah. The theory of theories, right?
Yes.
And to me it centers around this very conversation we're having, which is you can control your states of consciousness to induce identical levels of joy and bliss that you would have if you did achieve all the, if you did like accrue all the globlets of matter or whatever. Uh-huh. You don't need any of that. If you are in control of your nervous system enough, theoretically, you could induce those states minus procuring them, minus the transaction, minus the hoarding of the one style of energy to get the other style of energy. And that, you know what I mean? You could do it minus any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we all started figuring out how to do that, would completely put a bullet right in the fucking dark, oozing heart of society as we know it.
Yeah,
because no one's going to do it now. Everyone's going to be like, I'm not going to go for that. You know, I really don't need a job that pays me that much, because in my reasonably priced whatever, I feel like I'm in heaven just because I've gained control of my consciousness enough.
Totally, man. Like one of the cardinal Taoist concepts is the idea of knowing when to stop. And they say that if you don't know when to stop, that's when all sort of calamities will follow. because Ooh. There is a sweet spot where you know where you hit everything you can get from that, and pushing forward is not going to deliver more of the good stuff. It's not going to make life any easier. It's just going to make you addicted to running on this wheel like a hamster kind of thing.
Right.
And so the idea of knowing, and again, knowing when to stop, meaning you have to get there. It's not necessarily, again, if you are homeless on the street, we can talk about how, hey, you know, you can find the happiness in this moment. It's like, yeah, fucking easy for you to say. You're not dealing with my meth addict guy, Joe, who's next to me stealing my sleeping bag as soon as I turn around.
Or... Yeah.
So I get it. You know, there is a place where...
I can't afford insulin, motherfucker.
Exactly. Exactly. 100%. So we're not saying this thing like, everybody, just find your bliss now while in the middle of the Rwandan genocide or while you have no money to eat. You know, no, those are real problems. Got it. But once you get to a certain point where you have food on the table, you have a reasonably assured roof over your head, you have, you know, the basics of life to keep you going, then a lot of that is where it becomes a game of diminishing return. You know, working like a dog to make more money, how much more of your life is it going to deliver in terms of potentials for happiness? Not a whole lot. If anything, it can actually get to a point where it's counterproductive. So in knowing where it's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
This is good. This is what I need. I don't need to work 10 times as hard to make more. This is the good spot.
Yeah. I just bought a fucking house, man. So I'm the biggest hypocrite on the fucking earth right now. I bought into the thing, buy a fucking house. I didn't want to rent anymore. I want to know what it's like to buy a house. That's the problem with consumerism, is because it's like, I can theoretically imagine what it's like to own a yacht, but I can never really know what it's like to own a yacht until I own a yacht.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So this is the terrible, like, carrot they dangle in front of the greedy little rabbit in our hearts, is it's like, oh yeah, fuck your philosophical shit.
Yeah.
I want to know what it's like to have this or that or that. And then when you get the thing, it's always the identical result, which is not much. Didn't really seem to ripple the waters much at all. There, it's cool. I mean, it's cool like in a video game or something, but it's like, it's not like, you know, there wasn't the if, you know, after the grand initiation of being vetted by a zillion different people to buy a fucking house, which is the you know, Western initiation ritual of adulthood, or of like, you know, it's clearly an occult initiation ceremony.
Yeah.
The signing ritual, you got to go into a room and like do a completely pointless like signing of like a trillion sheets of paper in front of a like special person, the notary, who's been authorized by some other thing to like be there to I watch the signings.
Yes.
And it's the whole thing is like, it, to me, it seems even more ridiculous than some of the like initiation rituals I've seen in documentaries, you know, where people are like, you know, putting praying mantises on their nipples, or like, you know what I mean? Like what? It's this. It's like, that makes more sense.
Yes.
Then like, all right, yeah, okay, I'll sign this and 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 this, and now the signing is done. And then you get this key, and then now this like shell that another thing used to live in, you go and inhabit, and the difference is this is my shell.
Right.
Versus I'm leasing a shell from someone else who's a shell collector who leases shells to these weird fucking, you know, creatures that we are that like to like curl up in shells and pretend that this is our home.
You know, I think the level you're talking about, though, despite the fact that I'm down with the whole praying mantis on the nipples metaphor, it's just
any
pure
day.
Poetry. I bow to such divine creation. But, you know, if you're talking about one house, you're talking about where you live, that's very real. Okay, so I get it. You know, you want to have your place where you have a say-so, where you don't have a... where you don't have an asshole landlord who's yelling at you, telling you what you can do, jacking up the rent, all of that. The problem is not that. The problem is when it's like, okay, I got a house. Now what? Now I need a bigger car. Okay, now I got it. Now I want the boats. No, now I want two boats. Now I want three houses. Now I... because that's the addiction.
Beach house.
You know, it's like when you have something that is like, no, you got the good stuff. You have a house, you have food, you have the, oh, there's a medical issue you need to take care of. You can. At that point, yeah. You're good. You know, if you make more money because you happen to do stuff you love and actually pays off, great. That's a win. But, you know, to still think with that mentality that got you there, you know, it's a weird contradiction because in order to be great at something, or even not to be great, but just to plain and simple make money. But let's take it even in the better sense. Even if you want to be great at something, you need to be kind of obsessive because you need to be disciplined. You need to push yourself. You want to fuck off for the day and relax. And instead, you're going to be driven and you're going to make it happen. You know, the whole rhetoric of the grind will get you to be able to achieve results. But then it becomes also a drag because it's like, well, okay, you got the results. And why are you still grinding? Why are you still there beating yourself up about, I need to go harder, I need to keep pushing? I'm like, why? It was a means to an end. It's not a... And so that's where it becomes a problem. And that's why, in fact, it's not that it's good or bad. It's like the whole grind, the porn that people seem to deliver forever in terms of motivational speaking is good to some degree, the hustle. But then past that point is actually poison. And so knowing how much to use where it helps you know, have the little obsessiveness that helps you be driven and make stuff happen, but also knowing that it's like, I did it. Now I can tone it down by 80% and play with my kids more. And that's the good life. Unfortunately, those are two opposite sides of the brain. You know, the stuff that makes you obsessive and driven clashes with the side that actually teaches to relax and enjoy the moment. And those are almost two different sets of personalities that most people cannot bring together.
Yeah, like one is the like war general and the other is the like monk or the, you know, forest person. Like, I just think it's I think it's difficult for people just to admit, like, look, you need to understand that you're having a hard time being alone with yourself. Like, you know, like that, like, you got to look at that because you can't, you're anytime you find yourself alone, you're getting on your phone and trying to do more shit or that seems to be the condition. That's the unified conspiracy is it's like, look, you can't be alone you're having a really hard time not doing anything. And if enough of us just stop doing 2% of what we do, I think you'd see a profound change in society itself. God, imagine if everyone just stopped working 10%. If they worked 10% less, there would be a dramatic shift. But then, to me, the conspiracy part of it is exactly what you're talking about—the grind porn. It's like there is an invisible, you know, like there's an invisible person beating the drum that is creating the rhythm that society is rowing at, you know? And if you don't look out, you know, you'll think you're the one who's deciding to row at that rhythm. And until suddenly you realize, like, wait a minute, why am I doing this shit? What am I doing? And usually by the time you like that happens, you've had like a heart attack. You know what I mean? You've been diagnosed. And you're like, oh shit.
100%, man. And that's the hard thing. It's really being honest with oneself and figure out what do I need to be happy? What do I need? What are the things that truly I need to work hard to make it happen? And at what point will I know when to stop and be and enjoy life more and relax? Like, one thing I loved about growing up in Italy was the fact that didn't even matter how poor you were, almost anyone who was not on the street by August time would take off. Pretty much everything was closed in August. There was hardly any work. And people would just go to the sea. You know, if you had money, you go to the fancy place by the sea. If you don't have money, you go to some crappy, whatever, cheaper place. But at the end of the day, everybody just spent a month laying down on the beach, sitting there, going swimming, sunbathing, reading books, doing whatever.
Beautiful.
And that's how you spend the whole month. And that does phenomenal things to your psyche, because for a month, you're not grinding, you're not pushing forward, you're not going with this, I need to hustle. You're just kicking back. And it's not a week or two where really there's not even time to adjust to that. Like usually in a week or two, people almost get depressed because they don't know what to do with themselves. No, you have a month. A month start becoming a serious stretch of time. You do have that moment where you go like, whoa, I don't know what to do when I'm not working all the time. But then you're like, you know what? Sitting here on the beach, sunbathing, going for a swim and reading a book feels pretty damn good. And you have a chance to really reevaluate your life, to think like, huh, this is me not doing anything. This is me not just being an extension of my job title. This is me how I want to spend my time. Oh, and now I actually want to do this other thing. I want to go visit that place or hang out with my friend. And it gives you a chance to reconnect with what it means to be human, which I think as a society is monstrously important. It's the equivalent of taking a meditation break during the day at a social level to have like the 1 month off where you just go do nothing. Or go do something, but it's something you choose to do, you know?
I think that's one of the reasons why people in America, when they go to somewhere in Europe or India, and they realize that, like, and they see an older civilization, and they look at the way that life is conducted in some of these. I remember in Sri Lanka, looking, oh, it's the sun is setting, we're on the train, and it's just people are just out, but they're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. They're watching the sun. I remember once seeing people watching, like, just, you know, husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends with these beautiful blankets laid out that they put out to. And this isn't like any special day.
No,
it's just any day.
That's how it is.
And they've got blankets out and the sun is setting. And I remember there's a video game called Katamari Damacy, which shows this funny, flowery, beautiful world. But it was that beautiful in the sense that I was watching a goat as the train goes by, going up the hill, getting on his back, sliding down the hill, and then going back up. Even the goats were fucking off.
Yeah, of course. You know, of course.
You know, like they had tuned into this chilled out vibe.
Yeah,
that was possible. You know, yeah, I love it. I think it's a very inspiring thing that you're saying, and it seems to be one of the great paradoxes of technology. Is like, how is it that with all this accelerated ability to conduct business, we still are working the same, if not more?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And where the addiction kicks in, because that's all you know how to do. You don't know what it means to sit in the garden and relax.
I get scared.
Yeah, you feel that your self-worth is tied to this. You know, you don't get self-worth from sitting in the garden. I get self-worth because I'll do this hard work and people will pay me for it. You have it. Nobody else showed you any different, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, to me, really, when I was doing this, I wasn't even realizing it. And like when Savannah was looking at me and going like, this does not look like success. She said like, what, 5 words or something. And I was like, whoa, you're 100% right. It's like, what am I doing? What the hell is this? You know? And so it's the way I see it is a very Taoist game, right? It's these opposite things that you both need, because you do need that ability to be disciplined, get stuff done, work hard. That's an important part of life. But you also need... the good stuff is also that allows that other side, the stuff that enjoy the moment, the stuff that can relax, that plays with kids, that is more carefree. That gives, they need to find a healthy balance. And that's kind of like what you were referring to earlier. Now, actually, the way you said it made me think of something I wrote in my very first book. I used the image that was almost identical to what you said. You are talking about this war general and the monk. I used the hippie samurai.
Yeah.
To me, the hippie samurai is exactly that. You know, you need that samurai side that's disciplined, that makes shit happen, that say that he's going to do something and he does and all of that. And at the same time, this happy hippie drop acid, look at the sky and enjoy the texture of the tree in front of you. That's what makes life worth it, because otherwise you're just an asshole who's effective. Who cares? It's like, yeah, you're disciplined and effective. Good job. Hitler was disciplined and effective too. That doesn't mean it's a good thing, you know, in itself. It's only what does discipline and effectiveness lead to? Does it create something beautiful? Otherwise,
right?
You know.
It's a good question to ask yourself from time to time is, how much am I like Hitler? Don't do that.
Yes. That's,
don't be like Hitler.
Yes.
You, like, don't invade. Are you about to invade France? Don't. Maybe
I'll stick. I think Poland and France are safe from me for now. Not. I don't make no promises about tomorrow, but for today, they're both safe.
Yeah, man. I think like what you're talking about is such a, I need the reminder, you know, now that I've just gone through like what essentially could only be described as some kind of capitalist seizure, you know, like a weird convulsive middle-age episode of acquiring matter.
Right.
And now looking at like, I got kids who I'm not hanging out with as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
Because I'm working to try to pay for the house. And there's something in that that's dreadful. And I don't want to be that person. I never wanted to be that person.
And it's so hard because, you know, you watch every single movie about that topic 10,000 times, kind of what you were saying. It's almost the Yoda cookie cutter kind of wisdom.
Yeah.
And still it hits you. You know, it's like, how many times have you learned that lesson? 10,000. And it's still easy to fall into it. So it's, it's a complicated game. And yet it's the only game
balance.
That is, right? Yeah, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem why people sometimes are, whether you look at politics or religion or anything, people, they discover something that works for them at one time, and then they want it to be the answer to all of life. And so they become addicted to these ideologies. Like, it's all about hustling and being tough. It's all about being a free market capitalist. No, it's all about being a socialist. It's all about, and they, you know, they discover one tool that work one time and they want to apply to all situations in life. When in reality, it's like a hammer is great to drive nails into the wall. It's not great when I want to use it as a spoon to eat soup. You know, it's like you need, the balance of the game is that there's a shitload of tools out there and you need to figure out what's the appropriate one at what time. And that requires you to be really aware, really be thinking on your feet, really be in touch with who you are and the conditions around you. And so it's no wonder that people love dogmas, because dogmas are reassuring. It's like you discover one good thing and now you apply to everything, even though you're applying to shit where it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
It's like, can't you see that
problem
can be solved in another way that's way more effective? It's like, no, it's my flag. It's my identity. Yeah. It's my ideology. It's my whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, fuck. Like, to me, that's one of the big human
You've
viruses.
Just become a skipping record.
Yeah, yeah. Completely. It's
it's a virus.
It is. It's,
yeah, I know what you're talking about. And it robs you of novelty. It's like if you're using the same tool or some like, way of interacting with the world over and over and over again, then it means that you've fallen prey to the idea that everything's the same, that right each moment is just like the moment before, meaning you can use the same methodology. It's you lose track of the terrifying reality, which is that, you know, every single moment the universe blips out of existence and blips. It's a new fucking universe. It might look the same to you, but at the quantum level, this shit is like constantly, like parts of it are not there, all for flickering flashes of impossibly tiny increments of time. Mm-hmm. And then they're back.
Yep.
So it's like, this is not the same place that it was a millisecond ago. So why are you using the identical habitual methodology for the variety of phenomena that are appearing in front of you at any given moment?
Yeah, and I think it's just reassuring. You know, it's like he feels safe because he's like, I figured it out once. Do I really have to figure it out again and again and again? And he's like, yes, because things are not the same as the ones you figured out the last time. Good job last time, that worked. But now it's a whole different context. And so you trying to apply the same answer to this new context doesn't work. That's why I'm distrustful go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
No, I'm distrustful of political slogans. I'm distrustful of identity, ultimately. I think that identity is a trap because it forces you to be this one thing where life requires you to be more than one thing. And so the more we insist on embracing the... And other people do it too. I mean, think how life works. You know, if you are an actor and you do a really good job at playing a part, now you're going to get typecasted. They are always going to call you where it's like, oh, he's the tragic character. Let's play him. Or he's the funny guy who cracks jokes. Even in anything, right? People will want to... They want to have their recognizable label that is like, I want the discipline guy. I'm going to listen to Jocko Willink every time. And maybe Jocko Willink that day wants to braid flowers in his hair, but he's like, no, I'm the discipline guy. That's what people expect from me. So I have to deliver that every single day. And he's like, you know, we trap each other in that game. You know, we trap ourselves because identity is a seductive bitch. And we trap each other by forcing this idea on one another with expectations and everything else. And it's a dangerous...
Yeah, that's what Ram Dass says. Sometimes we're like, sometimes you'll be like, hey, why aren't you wearing that fucking mask you always wear? Mm-hmm. I want the mask you used to wear back on. Yep. I don't know this mask you're wearing. It's a totally different mask. I don't like that mask.
Yep.
Put on the other mask. That's the mask I'm comfortable with.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's... Well, I do think that there's this, what you're saying reminds me of this concept. I remember hearing this teacher, Roshi Joan Halifax, talk about regarding Zen and insecurity and the way Zen koans have this sort of, they're supposed to make you feel insecure. They're supposed to like, that they're pointing to the human situation is insecure. It's naturally an insecure situation. Like, you don't know when you're going to die. You don't know really what's coming down the line next. And so you try to battle that insecurity with ignorance by ignoring that reality to produce a false sense of stability. And that's the projection of the identity into the world. It's like, this is a complex variety of behavior patterns that I have perfected that limit chaos in my life. That's what you think.
That's exactly, I think you nailed why people are addicted to identity, because there's this feeling that it's familiar, it's reassuring, it limits the chaotic energy that's around you, and you can fall back on it, all of that. And to some degree it's true, but it also becomes a prison. You know, it also becomes this, it's safe, so let me lock all the doors and stay behind the bars. And it's like, yes, it's safe to some degree, but no, it's not safe because you just put yourself in this box that ultimately life is happening around you, things are changing, and you're desperately holding on to this thing. And I mean, if you think about, like, especially these days when you hear people, you can say the sun is outside and somebody will say, I hate your politics. That's a horrible thing you said. How dare you unfollow, cancel, I hate you, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, why are people so hardcore on some of this stuff? Because, again, it's about their identity. It's about their sense of self in the world, about what they believe to be holy and true. When the reality is that nothing is as simple as they play it in their heads in terms of, I mean, think about like the big government, more socialistic model versus the free market capitalism.
Yeah.
There's not a single system in the world that has 100% free market capitalism or 100% state-controlled ultra-communist thing. Everything is a mix of the two.
Right.
So the argument is not between two systems. Yeah. The argument is, where do we draw the line? Do we do 66-34? Do we do 52-48? that's an argument that's so much easier to have, because it's like, okay, we don't disagree about some cosmic significance of life. We're disagreeing on where exactly we tune in the dial. That's a lot. That's about strategy. You know, we can figure out the strategy. We can try. Oh, you know what? You're right. We went a little too far away. Let's tweak it a little down now. That's a discussion that would be easy to have. You don't have to get mad about it. But instead, it's an identity thing. It's like the evil socialists are out to get us, or no, it's those bastard capitalists. It's like,
And we're not nimble enough to just, that's the problem. Government is not nimble. We have the ability to be so much more nimble than we are. I mean, just look, the amount of time it took to get relief checks to people, and the amount of time, it's just not nimble. So it's not represented. It's, democracy has to be a representation of the will of the people, not just by voting, but literally a representation of where we're at as a people. And it's like the systems they're using to process what the people want are like old, musty, hackable, fucked up, corrupt systems. So the whole thing's all gummed up, and it's like, so we can't even get to the point of like, how much do we want? 40, 60? What do we want? 30, 20? Or how about tomorrow we try 80% free market capitalism, and then the next day let's see what happens. 100% communism? How do we like that? No? Okay, let's shift it a little bit. It doesn't work like that. And so this has produced this awful, you're with us, or you're against us.
Yep.
And that's horrible, because it's like implying that there's some totalitarian mentality, you know, that there, or that a person is just one way of being, one way of thinking of things, instead of this constant fucking slot machine spinning of ideas and possible and like experiments. You know, it's just, we're not advanced enough yet to encapsulate, our government isn't advanced enough yet to encapsulate how advanced we've become. So it's almost as though we have to take on the personality of like Neanderthals to communicate with our government. We have to, you know, but we're all communicating with each other with I think some nuance, and especially with a technology that's unprecedented. But the way, but we're having to talk to our government in ones and zeros, and in like, in, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like we're like having to be like, me want this, this me, you, I need this, when it's like we're way past that. But that's all they hear is these grunts, and you know, so it's a grunt where we have this grunt language happening with the thing that's supposed to be representing how wildly advanced we've become, at least from my perspective.
No, and I think you're 100% right on the structural issue that, like, the way society is set up, the way our political system is set up is like horrendously ineffective.
Yeah.
And there's that problem. And then I think there's the other one of it, which it starts, I mean, even before we get to that level, which is a whole other kind of worms, even at a more basic level, it's inside people's head. You know, people do this to themselves before it's even about how do I actually get these ideas to be implemented into practice. It's like people marry into this ideological prison, and they are so committed to, and so that, that's even before the practicality aspect. That's like a virus of the mind. Then if you were suddenly more enlightened and more willing, now there's the problem of, okay, now how do we actually do it? Because it's still, you know, we got the theoretical part solved, but how do you make it happen in real change, in real life, through governments, through non-governments? Through, that's a whole other kind of worms. But we're not even at the level of addressing that kind of worm, because before that, there's even the level of just individual inside people's brain. People are addicted to identity, to ideology, to dogma, to all that stuff. And that's kind of a problem.
Well, kind of a problem. Yeah. We'll figure it out, though, I think. I mean, it's just I think we've, the nervous system is formed. We've got the framework, I think, for the dispersal of the next Taoist iteration, or the next Buddhist teaching, or the next Christianity, or the next whatever. Like, we have this, it's like all of the systems are go. And right now they're just being filled with confusion, because we're all a little naturally, especially the last couple of years, confused. So we're just seeing this confused static. But that, what the exciting thing is, the thing is set to like for something to come along, or a group of people, or God knows what, to like.
Really, I know what it is.
What?
It's Duncan Trussell's.
Fuck
Maitreya,
that!
Savior of the world.
No,
he has awakened. He has arrived.
Don't Maitreya me. Hell no. Hell no. I'll tell you this, man. Hell no. I don't care if like 1,000 robed beings appeared in front of me in the forest and said, you want to convey some. Hell no. I'm not falling for that shit. You know, that's the thing. Like any of the avatars that come to Earth, you got to be a little suspicious, because they were the ones who were like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
When you know there was like whatever the Christ energy was that descended here, you know, there was like thousands of other beings. They're like, no, you know, I can't do that Jesus thing. I'm busy that.
Yeah, you take one for the team. Now, in fact, notice, by the way, that I didn't say me. I said you do it.
I know what you said.
Duncan clearly is the guy to go for.
Sadly, even if I do know you're joking, obviously, even if there were some possible, like, I would never do. I like that. Fuck that. It's all about decentralization now. Like, I'll tell you this. If I could be like a hair follicle on the head of a messiah, I might take that job, or just like an eyelash or something, a belly button. That's probably asking too much.
Yes.
I wouldn't mind being like bit of DNA in the thing itself, but God fuck being the whole thing.
Yeah.
We got to get past this centralization problem, man. It's the problem. It's like once we communally integrate to form a Voltron style messiah, that's where I would be interested.
And I think that's where it's tricky, because ultimately the way also human beings are wired is that we are, I mean, it's the equivalent of like, think of like some brilliant meditator trying to teach a bunch of monkeys to meditate. You know, you have to take this monkey who's like taking flea off his thing, the other one who's going off with the other, and you're like doing all this work, and suddenly you get them all and you're getting all calm, and it's like, we're getting there. And one just flicks a thing on the other's head, and the other one goes like, fuck you, and I have to kill it. Now all the monkeys are screaming and going at it, and you're like, fuck, not this again. And it's like, it's because we respond to fear and outrage so much faster than we respond to kind of like some of the things that help us make life better. So that it takes nothing. It takes any idiot with a megaphone can go like, outrage, fear, look at that. And everybody's going to lose their mind on this. Whereas the work of creating something beautiful is so much more delicate and so much more subtle and stuff that is like, you know, it's the old adage, right? It's so much easier to destroy than to create. And I think that applies at a psychological level, where it's so much easier to get angry and yell at somebody on Facebook rather than just really sit down and create something beautiful.
I just deleted an angry tweet. I mean, I tried not to send it, and I looked at it, thought, don't send that. That's just more shitty energy in the world. Why are you going to do that? And then I'm like, I'm going to do it. Do it. Fire the fucking missile. Invade France.
Yes.
We've got it, you know, because it's like, it's just easier to do that than to like, you don't see any megaphone people going around being like, patience. We should all be more patient.
Yeah, I should really based on your insight, we should all put like littler picture next to the computer, so that as you're about to hit that tweet, you're like, that's the Hitler energy. That's the Hitler tweet. Don't do it. Of course, that may be slightly embarrassing when people come visit you, when you have like littler pictures next to your computer. It may be slightly misunderstood.
You try to explain?
No,
it's because I don't want to tweet. Hey, thank you, Daniele. As always, a joy to talk with you. Folks, don't tweet like Hitler.
Yes.
I'm sorry if I've tweeted angry shit. Don't tweet like Hitler. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, man. A perfect place to end. Tell people about your podcast, though, before we
So I host a couple of podcasts. There's Drunken Taoist. That's a chatty, philosophical, somewhat kind of podcast. It's free everywhere. And then there's History on Fire. There's a bunch of free episodes of History on Fire. There's about 50 of them. So there's a long way in the archives to go. And then the newer ones are behind a paywall, but it's like $3 a month or something. But even if you don't get to that, there's a long list of free episodes to go through beforehand. So that's the gig.
Thank you, sir. Check them out, folks. You already know them, though. God bless you. And hopefully I'll see you in person eventually. But I think it's going to be a little while. But thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thanks for being on the show. A big thank you to Daniele Valelli for appearing yet again on the DTFH. And much thanks to Chromadex Niagen, Squarespace, and Purple for sponsoring this episode. If any of those products struck your fancy, the links and the offer codes are all at duncantrussell.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and I will see you next week. Until then, have a wonderful weekend and enjoy the whispers of spring.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.